Welcome back to Rotten Rewind. We are a podcast that looks back at the films that critics, they wanted a divorce. They were not happy. We look back at the movies that were barren. And
oh my God.
Yeah, they were barren according to RottenTomatoes.com.
We look back at the movies that critics put sunglasses side down on a table.
Exactly.
Yes. Lens side down.
If a film fails to score above the 60% threshold on RottenTomatoes.com, we get to talk about it right here. I'm Max Rue.
I'm Courtney Pronto.
Yeah. Yes. We are the Brangelina of podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's us.
I hope I'm more of a Angelina than a Jennifer, if I'm honest. Like,
I definitely choked you out on an airplane. No, I would never do that.
And did he choke her?
I think he put hands on her. And I don't know. He might have choked her out. It's possible. We're not sure.
We don't know.
I think most actors, you can put a little asterisk next to their name that's like, might have choked out a woman.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Possible.
We're talking about By the Sea. This is a movie that you might not remember until
you go,
oh yeah, they made another movie together. It's not Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It's By the Sea.
Well, I guess like if you're subscribed to this podcast, like you probably are like a little dorky, but wow. I don't know.
Don't insult our listeners like that.
I just don't know. I think if I was to like talk about this movie at work, people would be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, this movie's not canon. Let's say that. This is not a movie that did well when it came out. This is not a movie that found an audience later on.
Yeah, I think if anyone remembered it, it would be because they remembered like almost like tabloid fodder of it being made. Like stills from Brad and Angie. You know, like I think it was most notable for how much it probably appeared on like Just Jared.
By the Sea got more play on Just Jared than in movie theaters.
Yeah. I saw it in theater.
I saw it in theaters too. I saw it opening weekend.
Did we know each other yet?
Not quite. 2015.
Oh man, just 1 year later.
I know.
I'd snub you at Zodiac.
I know. I went and saw this movie by myself. I think there was two other people in the theater.
I saw it by myself as well.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I'm interested. I'm curious about this one. It premiered at AFI Fest, I remember. And then pretty much right away, people were like, it's bad. And I think people thought it was going to be bad even leading up to it. I think they were like, this seems like it's going to be a disaster.
It's like when Madonna makes a movie.
Yeah, didn't Madonna and Sean Penn do a movie together?
I'm thinking of that one that's like maybe just called W, but it's not the W. Bush movie.
That's the Madonna one with Andrea Riseborough. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. To me, this
is similar to that. Who is the guy in WE?
Not Benedict Cumberbatch.
No.
Oscar Isaac, apparently.
No.
James Darcy.
Is that
James Darcy is like okay. Oscar Isaac is in it, and he's probably the most famous.
Okay. It's Abby Cornish, Andrea Riseborough. Oscar Isaac is in it. You're right. David Harbour is in it. Natalie Dormer.
I've never seen WE. I just think that they have at least the way that, again, sources like Jared and D-Listed covered them was always sort of like, oh, this is like kind of like self-indulgent
sure
art.
We could do
powerful women.
We could do a WE Swept Away.
Swept Away,
double feature. I've never seen Swept Away. Is it horrible?
Oh, that's almost one that I would want us to watch together, like that Antonio Banderas movie. Yeah, that one I almost need to see your face. Listen, I think it's wilder than Geely.
Wow.
Gobble, gobble.
Okay. The most obscure movie we have, according to Letterboxd.
Not obscure, but okay, like the most forgettable.
Forgettable?
One that I'm like, did we do that? I think it would be.
Oh, I remember doing that. Ice Harvest.
Oh yeah, Ice Harvest.
I think it's The Ice Harvest. So according to Letterboxd, the most obscure movies we've ever covered on this podcast are the Ali Sheedy movie, I'll Take You There.
Oh, yeah.
Shadowboxer, the Lee Daniels movie.
That movie's great.
The movie deserves more attention. Impulse, the Teresa Russell movie that is actually screening at the Los Feliz American Cinematheque next week because Karina Longworth is doing it for her Erotic 90s series.
Really?
Yeah.
Fucking so cool.
Never Talk to Strangers. Again, should have a bigger audience. Blame it on Rio.
So stupid. That should have a huge... They should show that in film school of being like...
This is what happens to your career when...
Or like it's okay. Like if you...
This is what happens when you get old and senile and horny. This is what happens when you're too old and you don't realize how horny you are. Untamed Heart.
Again, That should be a huge audience. I was explaining that the plot of that movie to my boyfriend, and I can't get through the plot of it without laughing a lot. Heart. Does he have an ape heart? I don't know.
He does. He's got a bamboo heart.
A bamboo heart?
A baboon.
I still think the nurses are lying. I change my mind every time.
A head of state is also up there.
Okay.
Addicted to Love. Diabolique, the remake.
What about the Christmas one with Ben Affleck?
It's close. There's three Affleck movies that are close, but they're still a little higher. It's Gigli, 200 Cigarettes, and Surviving Christmas. Oh. Excess Baggage, Ice Harvest, That Cold Day in the Park. Those are all the most kind of obscure ones. What do you think is the most popular movie on Letterboxd that we've ever covered? The most seen movie, not the most liked.
Seen movie on Letterboxd
that we've ever covered.
Is it like so bad that people are like, oh my God, it's probably a Fast movie.
No.
Is it franchised?
No, it's a recent movie.
Is it Blonde?
No.
Is it Babylon?
No, Babylon is number three, though.
Fuck me. Give me one more hit.
It's got a lot of fine white folks in it.
Oh, it's Don't Look Up!
Yeah. The top five most watched movies on Letterboxd that we've covered are Don't Look Up, Don't Worry Darling, Babylon, The Great Gatsby, and Mother. I'm surprised Mother is up there.
Great Gatsby
is up
there.
That's weird to me. Too. And then Venom.
Fucking Venom.
Okay, the average rating, the highest rated movie we've ever covered. What do you think is the highest rated?
Bamboozled.
No, but that is in the top 10.
Fuck yeah, I'm a genius. In the Cut?
No.
Is it one that we gave a masterpiece?
I don't know if we were giving ratings then. It was an earlier one. It's Gay.
Is it But I'm a Cheerleader?
It is.
Oh, okay.
It is But I Am a Cheerleader. Okay. It's the most well-reviewed rotten movie on Letterboxd. It has a four-star average. Number two is Lost Highway. Number three is Girl Interrupted, which is crazy to me.
What?
Yeah. Number four is Nowhere. And number five is Babylon.
Uh-uh.
I don't know how that happened. Actually, most of the top 10 are gay movies, But I'm a Cheerleader, Nowhere, Two Wong Fu Things for Everything, and Velvet Goldmine are all in the top 10.
Velvet Goldmine's fun.
Debs is just outside of the top 10. It's because if your movie's gay, the kids on Letterboxd, they're going to love it. They're going to stan. They love the gays. Let's see. The lowest rated movie that we've ever covered is Gigli.
Gigli. Oh, Gigli. I think also Jawbreaker was intensely low. Oh, you're low on Letterboxd.
Okay. Low on Letterboxd. Gigli is the lowest. The runner-up is Halloween Resurrection, which is so mean because that's a great time at the movies. Just outside the top 10 of the lowest rated movies ever are Blonde, Knock Knock, and Capone. And Capone. So three of our favorites are up there.
These are three we stand for.
How is Sliver not in the top 10?
Dude, Sliver is so bad.
Sliver is one of the worst movies we've ever covered. We'll see where By the Sea ranks when it's added to the list. But we are talking about Angelina Jolie Pitts. At the time, she was credited as Angelina Jolie Pitts. I believe it is her third feature, By the Sea. This movie was shot on their honeymoon.
That checks out. Is like, you don't go your separate ways.
Yeah.
If you want to do any work.
Well, weirdly, they didn't get married till 2014.
No, they were together since
2005.
I knew that.
That I did not know, actually.
Yeah, I don't know if they had any kids after they got married. I think they had all their kids. Yeah,
out of wedlock. That's why they got a divorce. You don't do that.
You don't do that.
Yeah, you don't do that.
Not in Hollywood.
No. No, no, no. By the Sea. By the Sea. This is a movie that, yes, Courtney and I saw. We were some of the only people that saw this movie in theaters when it came out. It made barely $1 million at the US box office. Barely $1 million. It never got a wide release. We should say that. It never got a wide release, but it made $3.3 million worldwide. I was surprised it only cost $10 million to make. I mean, I guess they don't really go anywhere, but
they don't do it's kind of COVID-y before COVID.
Yeah. This is what a lot of rich people probably did during COVID.
Yeah.
They went to Malta and just kind of got really drunk and watched another couple fuck through a peephole. So a lot of people probably don't know what this movie's about. They just know that it's about a couple played by a real life couple. It's meta. It's set. Some people said it's set in the 60s. Angelina Jolie said it was supposed to be set in the 70s.
I was going to say, I think one of the first kind of uncanny and sort of like unbuttoned buttons that it has is that I don't know what time.
It's the 60s or 70s, but at times if they had cell phones, it could easily just be now.
Uh-huh.
That's what's weird about
besides like he needs to go get the radio.
The only thing that, because you know what, it's the Melanie Laurent couple feels modern.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Even though I know she's like dressed to look like Jane Birkin.
Also,
Head I weirdly buy as being in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
I buy kind of.
I think that both her and Pitt look a little like, maybe I'm projecting, but like, yeah, you know, you live in LA. Like you meet like kind of like a rich couple that's like so enamored with like French New Wave or something.
Sure,
and they've
sure.
like taken on this like look as a couple as like an affectation. And like, sure. It doesn't have to be this, but it's just like everyone knows the rockabilly couple. You know what I mean? Like the kind of sure. cowgirl couple. And these people
cowgirl we all couple. Know a cowbro couple.
Every yeah, front group has one.
If this movie was about a rockabilly couple coming to Dunn and on a Mediterranean island off Italy. Played by Henry Rollins and Courtney Love.
Yeah, okay. I was gonna say just the woman who played
Dita Von Teese.
Yeah, I was going to say the woman who played
Betty Page. Gretchen Mol, yeah.
Yeah, Gretchen Mol.
Dita Von Teese.
It's Gwen Stefani
and
Gavin Rossdale.
Or no, it's her new one. Who's her new one?
Oh, God, Blake Shelton.
Blake Shelton? Is that his name? Okay, yeah. Yeah, so...
So I think that they... Yeah, that it's supposed to be the 60s, but I think that she is just like a little bit too...
It's a little confused on the time period, which doesn't really bother me in a way.
No, it doesn't bother me. I think it's kind of cute.
It's nice. You don't know,
I think it's kind of cute.
Yeah, so they play an American couple. They're in France. He was a once successful writer. Now he's just
what kind of writer alcoholic. Do you think he is? Bukowski.
Like I think he thinks he's like a Hemingway or a Bukowski. Yeah,
me too. I think he thinks of himself as like a Hemingway. I like to imagine it being in present day, and he's just like a Dave Eggers type. Jonathan Safran Foer. He's a vegan.
he's pretending
he's a vegan.
Had a relationship with Natalie Portman. Yeah. It's weird how many people have pretended. How many famous celebrity men have pretended to have relationships with Natalie Portman? That's really scary.
Well, what I think happened with Natalie Portman is really embarrassing and like Googleable. I think it should be like kind of like a good night and good luck short movie. I think it'd be so fun. It's like they had a flirtation via email and Jonathan Safran Foer was like, oh, I'm gonna leave my wife. And she's like, oh, I don't like you that much.
Oh, that's weird. We've never met. Can you imagine three emails deep into a relationship being like, by the way, I left my wife. Yeah. I'm ready for you.
But Natalie. Her emails are just almost as embarrassing because he is an idiot and a writer, but probably kind of like smart and good at writing and talking to an actor. So I'm sure he's like nervous in his own ways. But she wants to be perceived as smart by this writer. And so her emails are like really labored. And then we should do a dramatic.
I went to Harvard.
Yeah, if you're going to be a super subscriber, Max and I will read.
We will read the emails to you.
Jonathan Safran Foer.
Yeah.
Natalie Portman emails.
But yeah, this couple is, she was a dancer. He is mostly was a writer, but is, you know, it's like a very cliche thing of he's trying to get inspiration. They're trying to get inspiration as a couple and for him as a writer. They're trying to reinvigorate the marriage. They are grieving something. We don't quite know what it is for a long time. And she kind of just likes to kick it in bed, which I don't blame. No judgment.
She likes to kick it in bed. She likes to wear unreasonable heels on a long walk and remind him later.
I don't know what I would say. If my wife did that, I would just be like, you should change shoes.
Yeah,
you should totally not wear those.
Actually, honestly, that was like when I was like, okay, I think this must be like the 60s or 70s because I think nowadays she would... like at least have like a pair of like Tevas.
They didn't allow you to wear anything but heels no matter where you went.
I don't think they had Tevas in the 60s. I definitely don't think they had Tevas.
You're making life hard for yourself.
And then he gets up every day and like swishes beer around in his mouth for a refreshment. And then he goes to that bar. Oh, who's the barkeep? He's great.
His name is Niels Oystrup. I don't know how to say his name properly. He is a French actor. He's a Danish-born French actor. He's great. If you've seen A Prophet, he's in A Prophet. He's a fantastic
actor.
Yeah,
that's the movie I'm used to.
I weirdly just rewatched A Prophet the night before.
It's so good.
It's a master. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, it's
he's
so
great.
Good.
He's great in this. Brad Pitt gets up every morning, goes to the bar. He says he's going to go right, but he just gets blacked out drunk instead. Also, look, relatable. Very realistic. I get it.
He's good.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's got experience. Yeah, she's kind of moping and mourning in their very beautiful, beautiful hotel.
She seems to like being that morose.
Like, she does.
Like,
she
have a good day. And he's like, and she's like, I won't.
Also, Same. I've definitely been there where I've had like girlfriends be like, have a good shift. And I'm like, I won't, but thank you.
Yeah.
It's going to suck, which isn't a good attitude to have. But you know, sometimes when you're that depressed, it's hard to be like, yeah, I'll try. You're just like, no, it's probably not going to be good. I have a pretty good idea of how today's going to go and it's going to involve me in this bed. So, but then a young couple is honeymooning next door to them, played by Melanie Laurent from Beginners and Inglourious Bastards. Yeah. And Melville Poupa.
Yes, I'm not
saying his name, but it's...
I like, have you ever seen anything with this gentleman?
No, he's in a movie called Lawrence Anyways that Xavier Dolan did, but I've never seen
this man before or since.
He's mostly in French movies, that's why. He's in a movie called The Christmas... Oh, he's in Speed Racer, but I don't remember him in it.
Yeah,
no, he's been acting for a long time, though.
Yeah, I just have not seen any of these movies, but yeah.
Yeah. So they're like a younger hot couple.
On their honeymoon.
And
Melanie Laurent's character is like really one of those brides that doesn't want to give up the identity as a bride. So she wears white every fucking day.
Sure. And they be fucking. A lot of the first part of the movie is kind of the monotony of her being depressed in bed, him getting drunk at the bar, fucking rinse, wash, repeat kind of thing. It's just the same shit for a little bit. I think the movie, for me at least, gives the indication of what a much more interesting movie is when they start looking through the hole at this couple next door.
No, I think that there's something transfixing about this movie. I don't know if I ever feel like it gels.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, there is something. This and Addicted to Love would be a great.
There's something about this where even the first time I saw it, I was like, this isn't totally working.
No,
it's kind of weirdly into it. I'm drawn into it and I can't explain why.
Yeah, spoiler alert, even though it has the trappings of being like a bad and boring for us, there's something so weird about it. And I don't know, and maybe this is intentional and I'm not giving like Jolie enough credit, but like some of it, especially now that we know that their marriage has ended and in like such a, I don't know, it seems like kind of a shit show, that you're able to like bring some like extra textual material to it that it makes it.
There's a metatextual like thing. That you can't look past.
You can't untangle it. Yeah. You'll never be able to. And to the point that like when they're like older and, you know, their obits are being written, like I think it will still be like a mentionable movie because it does sort of mark the last of this
it's
era
kind of
like the Brad Jelena era.
Right. And I think it works on a few levels and then doesn't work on others. I wish that the movie was 30 minutes shorter and really focused on just building it around them obsessing over this couple next door and then kind of reinvigorating their relationship and they're finding a way to be close to one another again through their failed dreams and wishes of what their relationship could have been or maybe what it used to be through watching this couple next door and her projecting her own failed dreams onto this couple and trying to slowly manipulate her way into their lives to kind of prove that like, no, you're not happy. You're not actually a happy couple. And I can break this so easily to show you how unhappy you really are.
It's in there, but it's left like pretty opaque. Like, I think that the movie is almost, and I don't know if it's because like she's making the movie and like as the filmmaker, it's more comfortable for you to be hard on yourself than like your partner who's playing probably like.
It's very hard on her and not hard on
him. It's very hard on her. It's really cruel to her and it's really not hard at all on him. I think that to me is like the movie's like biggest failing.
Yeah. Because it portrays him as a borderline abusive alcoholic who has a temper, which I'm assuming is based on their real relationship. But she seems to really let him off the hook in a way that's like, it's not that she's wrong or that he's wrong in how he talks about her, but his character is very much, he has more grace notes to play as opposed to her, where she's just kind of consistently playing that
she's
classic.
She's pretty hollow here.
Yeah.
Her voice doesn't even sound like how I imagine her.
No, it's very small.
I was like, I've seen a million movies with Angelina Jolie. Her voice almost sounds dubbed.
Yeah. And I imagine that's intentional. It makes her small. And then with Pitt, I think the worst part of the movie is the script, because I actually think it's actually fairly well directed.
Pretty.
And like, it's shot really
beautifully.
Did she write
it?
She wrote
it. She must have.
Yeah. It's shot pretty beautifully by Christian Berger, who is Michael Haneke's DP, who this is his only American movie. He's never made another American movie, so it's weird. He shot it pretty much entirely with natural lighting. It has so many fucking fascinating moments and scenes that work, and it's always kind of like on the right track, and then it kind of pivots or falls back into something you've already seen. So you're just like, we've been through that. Let's move into something else. Revolving the relationship, I think, around that hole in the wall is a pretty great like narrative.
No, that idea. Is cool.
Yeah. It's cool. I like that. Like I just wish it was that. And I love when they're getting drunk and they're actually happy together when they're listening to this couple next door. That stuff is fun. Pitt is really good at playing that kind of thing. I think my favorite moment is when he first comes in when she's sitting next to the hole.
Are you watching them? What were they doing? I asked because I was here the other day. Are you on a walk? And I noticed the hole. And I watched them. Talking. Does that bother you? Will you watch with me?
It doesn't really have a lot of criticism towards him, which is interesting.
It does. And like, even though like what you were saying up at the top, like they're mourning something, but you don't know what, like as like a girl watching this movie, I was like, I know what it's going to be.
You know what it is. You
because
know
it's like, is. I don't know. Why can't it be anything else? Like, why is it always just like the lack of kid or a dead kid? Like can't have kid. I'm just, I'm so fatigued by that, especially from someone who has like 20 kids. So what is this? Like your weird fantasy of like how you would be avoid like a shell of a person if you didn't have your little army of children. Like, I don't know. I just don't know. I just like felt kind of squicked out by it because like, I would like to hope that like there's a bunch of people out there that wish that they could have kids and still had great, you know what I mean? Like still did something or like, I don't know.
But that's another way like, that it doesn't really like, it leaves the Brad Pitt character. There's no judgment towards him because there's also this thing of like, he's consistently like, yeah, I'm a drunk and yeah, like I have my issues and maybe I feel like a failure right now and I'm a, kind of a shell of the man I once was, but I love you regardless. I don't want to fuck this woman next door. I don't have desire for other women. I love you. I want to fuck you, but you won't be close to me. And he's like, I don't care if we can't have a kid. That doesn't matter to me. I want to be with you. I want to have this marriage with you. And even when she's like, am I a bad person? And he's like, sometimes. I actually like that moment.
I like that. Yeah.
I wish there was more of a balance, but I do like him being like, sometimes you are a bad person, but that's okay. I accept you and I love you.
And I mean, like, I think what's interesting about the movie is like, she's depleted because she can't have a kid. And I think that like the movie feels like he's depleted because she's unhappy. And I think that that should have been interrogated more because I do think there's something kind of like scummy about a dude that like dates a beautiful dancer and is like alive by her light. But if her light dims, like he obviously doesn't have the capacity to like care for her and her moment of need.
Yeah.
And I just think that like, you know, that conversation is almost like, fuck me defending mother. Like, I think that like mother does do a better job at being like, actually like the position of like this like genius artist in a relationship can be nefarious. Yeah. Sure. There's even like a twin scene where like it was one of the scenes in Mother that we like think is funny when she's like, I like your writing. He's like, yeah, whatever. And here she's kind of like, I know you're a good writer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He almost seems like kind of, he plays it kind of pissed that she's like reading all day. She'll like read sometimes with her time. And it seems to like ding him up a little bit because I think that he wants her to not be able to like experience anything.
I wish he didn't know how to read.
And yeah, if he can't write, like he doesn't want her to be.
Right.
Because she also like gives a criticism of the book. Like it's like pretty forgettable, but.
And then his inspiration comes from her again, where he's like, I wouldn't write about the loss of our child, but I do want to write about you. So then it's kind of like, well, what are you writing?
Also,
he pumps that bug out quick too.
Yeah. And like the scenes of her like wandering around alone and then like just like glaring at children. I'm just like, come on. Like, so, give me a break.
So much content.
If anything, you'd probably be like thirsty for those kids to like it. She just is like, she might as well, she's like about to spit in a kid's face.
She should have kidnapped one of the kids. You're mine now. You got to give that kid back. You can't bring kids back to our hotel room. I don't know. It's weird because like there's times where it's really opaque, like you said, and restrained, and like it's almost not giving you quite enough. But I kind of like that because you have to kind of, they're both good enough actors to draw you into their pain. And
I don't think connection. She gets to do much here, though.
She doesn't. He's definitely given a lot more to do, but there's times where the screenplay is really goofy and really on the nose. She's kind of spelling out everything that's happening in a way.
I was pretty sick of the sunglasses trope. I was like, I get it. Please stop doing this. There's something perfume ad about it. Like,
yes. Yeah, for sure.
You know, if you want your perfume to smell like the stages right before a divorce, like this is an elongated perfume ad in a lot of ways.
Aaron,
like,
thank God it's Angelina.
Not. Yeah, exactly. Like,
you can't have kids and neither can she. Mm-hmm. No, I get that. I really actually, I think my favorite part of it, besides the hole in the wall, is the relationship with Brad Pitt and Niels Aarestrup at the cafe. Niels Aarestrup is like a widow. His wife died the year before. And just, he brings so much to that character.
He's great.
He's incredible. He's just like, I miss my wife. What is he talks about loving somebody is essentially that she was in so much pain when she was sick and he wanted her to hold on, but it was just for him. It wasn't for her.
Yeah.
And so knowing I'm ready to let this person go, because that's what real love is to allow them to leave when they want to. So I don't know. There's something really sad, even just him and the other guy at the cafe, the older guy, just seeing the shots of them alone together. There's something really, that isn't said that is really wonderful that I wish was in.
And Pitt
other
seems
parts.
Almost jealous of the barkeep for having a dead wife, because it seems like Pitt's almost jealous that guy got, even though it ends in a sad way, that's like almost like idealized version of a wife.
Yeah.
And, no, that's and a like, good listen, point, yeah. like, so I think that there's some things that it could have done with Pitt's character that could have just been so much more interesting, because I actually think that his character is like actively just as bad as the wife's character.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, the way that he talks about her, he'll just be like, yeah, she what? Like, you should have seen her. And it's like, bro, you pull into any town, you walk out of that car with Angelina Jolie, like, she's turning some heads still. Like, you guys both.
Yeah. I mean, she's upsettingly skinny in this movie. I will say that.
Well, it was the movie that she made after she, because her mom died of breast cancer.
Mastectomy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I also think, I think her body was like really scrutinized.
Yeah. She said that she wrote this after her mom died. She said that she was mourning the loss of her mother and that she didn't really feel like much of an actress, because the main reason that she ever even went to acting was because of her mother's dreams of being an actress, and that's what really inspired her. Obviously, she has a contentious relationship with her father, John Voight. I had no idea when I was reading about her. I guess when she was a teenager, she'd started acting when she was really young, and then she wasn't interested in it. And she like full time wanted to be a funeral director.
I did know this about Angela.
Yeah. So she was like studying that and then got back into acting.
She was like at some point the proto suicide girl. Like, there'd be no suicide girls if there was no 19-year-old Angelina Jolie. Yeah. I think that like her career turn, like after the Billy Bob stuff and like getting together with Brad, is like her public persona, I think, is like one of the biggest shifts of all time. And you kind of have to admire her for that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean.
But I kind of wish that she was still just a weird, crazy tattoo lady, you know?
Yeah, I wish she still had Billy Bob's blood and a vial around her neck.
Yeah, that was so cool. That was so cool. I wish she made a movie about their marriage.
For sure. That would have been a lot more fun. Except yeah. We have that movie. It's called Pushington.
I like Pushington.
Thank God we have Pushington. Pushington and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I always forget she was married to John Lee Miller, too. So Hackers is another.
Oh, I will never forget that.
Hackers, Pushington, Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
And now maybe some billionaire she was at Nobu with? Who knows?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, because I was like, what is she doing now? I feel like I haven't seen her in anything. Like, I know she's like in the Maleficent movies and Eternals.
Yeah, she's in Maleficent. Well, I was going to say, I think she did their Eternals and it was sort of a flop.
She had the funniest quote. She was, when she was doing that movie, Gia, she was married to John Lee Miller. The quote was, she called him and said, I tell him I'm alone, I'm dying, I'm gay, I'm not going to see you for weeks. I'm alone, I'm dying, I'm gay. Goodbye. Yeah, I guess the movie, like, I understand why it was panned. Obviously, it's kind of an easy target too. It's a fucking easy target. It's really easy. And I kind of admire how vulnerable it is in her own way. And
I think especially now that we know how the dissolution of that marriage, I think that it's like easier now to look back and be a little bit more generous to it and her, especially because I think that the character, I mean, her character is horrible. I'm not trying to be like, ugh, like I didn't like anybody, but I'm just like, why is your character's like so fucking awful?
Yeah, they both don't have a ton to offer. I mean, I think because Pitt is also so naturally, and they both are, but like, he obviously has more to do here, like watchable and can play lighter moments really well. He brings like a levity to it. And
well, she's dead. She's like, yeah, she's
might
done
as well
on
be
arrival.
A corpse. Yeah. I mean, like, and when he shows up really drunk and he gets in bed with her and he's laughing and she's like kicking him off the bed and he's like laughing and telling her to stop. A scene that
I think that sometimes people read it as being like, this is who Angelina Jolie is. Because I think that she has been like villainized in the media in the same way that, like, you know, it's like people prefer Jennifer Aniston and like Angelina's the bitch. Like Angelina is like the one that like dudes think is hotter probably. And
right. And they look at her as being
it's the Debbie Reynolds,
the marriage or something. Yeah. And
but he gets to be universally beloved.
Yeah. He's going to be 60 this year. Wow. Him, Keanu and Tom Cruise are on.
Keanu must be. Yeah.
Keanu's 58. We were going to have a guest today who unfortunately could not make it for scheduling issues, but Brandon Strusnik, who's a really great writer. I would recommend reading his work. I was really excited to have him on because he had written about By the Sea. And, you know, I think had a good perspective on it and didn't see it when it came out, saw it 5 years after and was kind of saying, like, I'm really happy that I saw this 5 years after because I would have not appreciated it at the time. And just, you know, talked about like how it's kind of this really messy, indulgent, vulnerable filmmaking. It's really open. It's kind of like about the dissolution of their marriage. Yeah, he had said, you know, what an astonishingly bold film. I'm so happy it exists. And it's embarrassing that it was received the way that it was. Maybe it doesn't all work as tidily as one would want, but I don't want, nor do I expect tidiness from filmmakers willing to take giant open swings. Yeah, I mean, like I really do still, like, even watching last night for the first time in 7 years now.
Yeah.
I still was like, yeah, I know this doesn't fully work, but I'm still weirdly just drawn into it. There's something about it. You kind of do get lulled into its weird rhythms. And at times the editing isn't great. And at times I do wish it was a lot shorter, but I kind of like it.
You know, it's a weird movie that, like, I don't think that I am done seeing. I wouldn't be surprised if I see it again. So
it's also one of those things where it's like the more that somebody, like, the more hate that you get towards a movie that you're kind of into, the more you're like willing to defend it and be like, you know what? Actually, yeah. I kind of like this movie.
It's like kind of good. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is, again, such an easy target that it's like, yeah, of course, this is going to be kind of goofy and vulnerable and on the nose. And yeah, it looks like a perfume ad at times. And I don't know. I haven't seen any of her other movies that she's directed.
Me either. I was gonna say, what else has she directed again?
She did Unbroken. She did that Cambodian movie. She kind of just does like her humanitarian thing these days. And
I would love to see her do a movie where she plays just a person again, because I think that she's like drifting from the reasons why I was like captivated by her as like a youth. Sure. You know,
she was in that movie last year that it had big released in January 2005 energy. It was called
The Fire One.
Yes, The
Fire One. That was terrible.
It's not very good. She's not even bad in it. It's just like not a good movie. Like Bernthal's good in it, but it's not good.
Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Yes, Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Okay, I'm going to hot take, or this is my prediction. She's going to be in a Knives Out movie.
Oh, that's not a bad call.
Thank you. I'm shimmying. Yeah. She's going to be in a Knives Out movie.
It's going to be that or Pushing 10-2.
Right.
People have been demanding a Pushing 10 sequel. Is that like the most obscure movie that we talk about on this podcast consistently?
Pushing 10? No, I don't think so.
We talk about Pushing 10 a lot.
You're
Doesn't
right.
your dad like Pushing 10?
Oh, yeah. So to me, it's not obscure because it's like very...
It's about air traffic controllers falling in love. Like, what? And it's with John Cusack, Billy Bob Thornton, Cate Blanchett, and Angelina Jolie. There's three Oscar winners in this movie.
Okay, I think that the most obscure movie that you reference all the time is just calling me Chica every day. I laughed at that. Like, I was like at work and you're like, hey, Chica. And I like laughed and someone was like, what was that? And I was like, oh, it's referencing this movie called Black Hat.
And Miami Vice. No, people know Chica. If you're a manhead.
If you're a manhead.
You know Chica.
Hola, chica.
Hola, chico.
But try explaining that to someone who doesn't care at all.
Ay, chica. I think it would be easier to explain Chica than the 1999 film Pushing 10.
Okay, you're right.
It centers on Nick Falzone, a cocky air traffic controller who quarrels over proving who's more of a man with fellow employee Russell Bell. What?
That movie's pretty fun, right?
I've never seen Pushing 10. I don't know.
Oh, you've never seen
Pushing 10? I've never seen Pushing 10. John Carroll Lynch is in it as a guy named Dr. Freeze.
Yeah, I think Pushing 10 is kind of fun. Again, I watched it as a kid with my dad like at least twice.
It has a 48%. There was no way Pushing 10. Come on.
Talk to my dad.
He'll be our guest for Pushing 10. He loves Pushing 10. Shot by the guy who shoots all the Dark Castle movies like Ghost Ship and 13 Ghosts. Nice.
Oh, really?
Full circle. Or the woman. I think it's a woman, actually. Wait. No, it's a man. His name just happens to be Gale. Anyway. Anything else you want to add?
I think I get it. Like, the plot is interesting, but like watching these people be so fucking like fancy and then like so morose. Like, I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah, listen, I know. No, I think it works.
I just want another stimulus check.
Yeah, I would have happily watched a movie about this couple listening to this younger couple next door fuck, and then
I just don't see why it needs to be in the past.
I don't either. I also kind of wish, I would love to see like a darkly comedic, like erotic thriller style take on this, where this older couple who's miserable just destroys this young couple's life while spying on them through a hole.
Oh, that would be really fun.
Like that would be
tough. Yeah, it's like, that would be really fun. It's like a little Addicted to Love, a little My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah, I just want to see them like destroy this couple's life and then that brings them together. That would be tight. I would be into that. But as it is, I still kind of weirdly admire it.
I didn't know you liked cards so much. That's nice. Cards are fun. It's a good game. I like cards.
Do you want a drink?
No. No, I don't want a fucking drink. I want to know what this is. Do you want to hurt me? Hmm?
No.
Hurt me.
No, I don't want to hurt
you. Just do it. Hurt me. Get it over with.
By the Sea has a 35%. It's low. It has an even lower audience score of 28%.
Not surprised about that.
No, I can't imagine many audience members showed up and were like, yes, the Niels Aristrup stands did not show up. Alonzo Duralde of The Wrap said, if By the Sea weren't so aggressively humorless, it might also qualify as camp, so unsuccessful in its pursuit of weighty drama. Unintentional laughs are hard to come by here. Instead, they are yawns. There are yawns aplenty. There are yawns. Peter Subsinski of RogerEbert.com said, it is baffling to discover that for her third directorial effort, By the Sea, she has produced a film that is such a borderline unendurable exercise in vapid self-indulgence that it almost feels like an exceptionally straight-faced parody of empty-headed star vehicles. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone said, writer-director Angelina Jolie's attempt to emulate European art cinema is a slow, sodden, stupefyingly dull take on a 70s marriage gone bad. And Rex Reed of the New York Observer said, looking lovely and catatonic, Angelina Jolie, who now calls herself Angelina Jolie Pitt, has come up with an exercise in self-indulgence for herself and her husband Brad that is so boring it defies description. By the Sea is not only a dog, it's a dog that's got fleas. This dog has fleas. You gotta put this dog down. Positive review. It's from Richard Brody, The New Yorker. He said it's a romantic, erotic drama that's told with an unusual blend of rapture and coldness, of overwhelming yearning and clinical detachment. And above all, the movie has images that go far beyond the recording of performances and the framing of action in order to make a melancholy and mysterious visual music. Okay. Hey, who's your MVP?
I don't know. Brad?
It might be. I love Niels Aristrup in this.
I really like him.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, maybe it's him.
Brad gives it some life, though, at least.
Brad gives it some life. It's like, yeah. I have a criticism with like the way that his character is portrayed, but I guess like not his performance. So I guess I'll give it to Brad.
Yeah.
Has he ever been our MVP? He was like our least valuable player in
Interview with the Vampire. He just clearly did not want to be there.
Yeah.
He doesn't do a lot of rotten movies. And when he does, I don't know how many appearances he can possibly make on the podcast. I don't think there's a ton of them.
There has to be. I mean, he's in so many movies.
He is. I don't know. Rotten Tomatoes is celebrating its 25th anniversary, everybody.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so we can talk about Bullet Train. We can talk about War Machine. We did The Counselor, which he's fun in. He doesn't really do rotten movies.
Oh, wow. I think of him as someone who works so
frequently. Oh, yeah, we did Ocean's 12. Mr. and Mrs. Smith is a 59%.
We should just get it done.
The ones that we can do also are California, for sure.
Oh, duh.
I would rather not do 7 years in Tibet.
I hate that movie.
Oh, yeah, we did Meet Joe Black.
No beer, sister, no devil, no dopey. Everything gonna be irie.
Oh, yeah.
Meet Joe Black. The Mexican.
That movie sucks.
He is really my least favorite part of Troy. I just don't think he works in Troy. He's just not meant for that period.
No.
But otherwise, yeah, he is a voice in Happy Feet 2.
That's hot.
Thank you, Brad. We love you.
We do love you.
We hope those allegations are...
Don't choke anyone.
Keep your hands to yourself. You keep your hands to yourself. You think this is bad and boring.
No, I said that though it has the trappings
of
being a bad and boring movie,
I gotcha.
There is something transfixing and mesmerizing and hypnotizing about it that like...
Yes.
This is the most, on paper, I feel like, bad and boring movie we've ever done.
Yes.
But it's not bad and boring for me. I don't think it's a cult classic. I think it's one of those like time capsule ones. I just think it is so just a little bobble piece of what these two people could do with like their money and fame and
you know
half
what?
Of a good idea.
Yeah. It's a really fascinating movie. I think it is a good movie with reservations. I like By the Sea. I don't quite know why, but something about it draws me in. And I thought about it a lot in the years after I saw it. Probably not a lot of people did think about this movie too much. I think it really gets at something really interesting and great a few times and just doesn't really stick the landing. But hey,
That's okay.
I could have sworn I owned this movie, so I had to rent it last night. I thought I owned
shocked.
This that I don't.
I'm shocked that you got one wrong for yourself.
That I thought I owned this and I didn't?
Yeah.
I have so many, it's hard to keep track. Thought I owned Box Lux, but I don't, so I'm gonna go get it.
Oh, what a sucker. You should. That movie rocks.
Yeah, I know. Some guy being told that he doesn't own Box Lux. Yeah, I know. I should.
You're the only time anyone has ever had that exchange ever.
About Vox Lux?
I know.
I know. I should go get it. Huh? It used to live on Hulu. It's not on there anymore, though. So I'm gonna
oh, man.
Because I like it. Anyway, By the Sea. Yeah. So look, if you're morbidly interested, I say give it a shot. It's available to rent. You might hate it. You might find something morbidly fascinating about it like we did.
Yeah.
That's what this podcast is all about. You got to give things a shot or a second
chance. I'm sure like Brangelina heads have all seen it, you know.
The Brangelina heads have definitely all seen it. Thank you. If you're listening to this, you're listening on Patreon. We can't thank you enough for subscribing and keeping this podcast alive. But a special thank you to our top subscribers, Royce Burke, Victoria Kruger, Andrea Ferris, ASR, Ben Beakey, Bark Floyd, Devin Hansen, Jean Yonarel, Britton Chance, Constant Carino, Graham Redman, Jeff Raposh, Neil Fuller, Matthew Hayes, Brittany Barker, Brody Anderson, Eric Hockman, J.D. Jankowski, Carrie Owens, Madeline Dugan, Mary Caitlin Koski, Nick Laskin, and Ryan Oliver. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yes, join us next week. We will be in our last month of this series. We will be kicking off our last month with some girl power movies. Boxfire. I guess it's kind of maybe that's a shitty thing to say about it. I think it's about a bunch of girls who got abused come together for revenge. So same thing with Sucker Punch, except it's more
whatever.
A fairy tale.
Yeah, that one's like a trick ending. I think that's why I've never seen it.
I'm excited to see it because I've heard
is John Hamm in it?
Yes, and Oscar Isaac.
Oh, well.
And our girl Jenna Malone.
Oh. But
Abby Cornish, Jamie Chung, and Emily Browning.
What's Jamie Chung doing lately?
I don't know. I think she's just married to that guy, Brian Greenberg. But, you know, the guy from How to Make It in America, the show about jeans. It was like Entourage with jeans. They were like, we're selling jeans, yo.
No, I did not know that there was a show.
You don't remember that show about where they were like, we're selling jeans?
No, I don't. Do they say we're selling jeans, yo?
Probably. Somebody probably says that at some point. It's like a we're in New York hustling and grinding. I got this jeans line. That show got like 2 seasons, I think. I'm pretty sure they gave that show 2 seasons. The show about selling jeans.
I did not know that.
How to sell jeans in America. They were grinding. The series ends with all of them being murdered, unfortunately.
Is it really?
No, but that would be crazy. I don't know. I don't know how the show ends, but they line them up for some reason and kill them.
Also, knowing you, you would have opened with that. You would have been like that show where they sell jeans and they all die at the end. Yeah. Lake Bell is in this?
Yeah.
Kenan Sossaman is in this?
Yeah. It came out like fucking, it's just like 2010, I want to say.
What the fuck?
Yes. And you can probably watch it on HBO Max. They do take some of their shows off, but How to Make It in America might still be on there.
The posters for the promo material for the show is very, we're selling jeans, yo.
Fuck yeah, it is.
You're right, that is.
Isn't Eddie K. Thomas on it too? The guy from American Pie?
And Luis Guzman.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. I know the main How to Make It in America trivia. For a show that I only watched 2 episodes of, I know way too much about it.
Have you seen more episodes of this or Tulsa King?
Tulsa King. What a show. What a time to be alive.
Yeah.
Because it was executive produced by Mark Wahlberg.
It looks like it was.
This show somehow is a 66%. So we're going to do a bonus episode season on How to Make It in America. Every week, we're going to watch a new episode of How to Make It in America. There would be no girls without How to Make It in America. Anyway, thank you for listening. We will see you next week. If you want to watch How to Make It in America, it's on HBO Max. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar.
share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me? Bad times are coming and I reap what I done sowed. Hey, hey. Well, let me tell you something. All day.